I just know that you know more about Claude McKay than I do. So.
Oh, let me go to those notes.
So this is the local YMCA. This is the Harlem YMCA. And it was the first stop for a number of great literary figures and just civil rights figures. Malcolm X, back when he was still Malcolm Little, when he first came to New York from Omaha, Nebraska, he first stayed here, along with Langston Hughes and a number of others.
Now, Claude McKay, he was a Jamaican-American writer and poet, best known for his novel Home to Harlem, as we were just discussing. In 1912, when he came to America, he was actually shocked by the racism he encountered, because he had an idea of what America, the land of opportunity, yeah, among the free, supposed to be. And he came here in 1912 to study, and he was shocked by it. So he went back and forth between his homeland and here, became involved with a group of radicals who were unhappy both with Marcus Garvey's nationalism and the middle-class reformist NAACP. So he had communist leanings, because he said these two groups are just out of whack.
We didn't touch on him too much. We actually passed by right after we were at Maya Angelou's house. That park that we passed by is called Marcus Garvey Park. Marcus Garvey's a very controversial figure in the civil rights movement. He was active around the turn of the 20th century. And he did a lot for Black American businesses. He tried a lot to sort of prop up Black Americans and get them more financially independent. But he also was for segregation. And he launched this thing called the Black Star Line, because one of his great dreams was for all of the Black Americans to leave America and go back to Africa.
Now, may I please point out that he wants all Black Americans to go back to Africa, a place we've never been.
You're right.
He was not even American born.
No, he was Jamaican.
He came here and brought these ideas, and he got supporters also. Like the mafia, when they can't catch them doing the mafia stuff and the government wants to get rid of them and they, like, you know, find tax evasion, they got rid of Marcus Garvey through mail fraud.
They tore down the Black Star Line through some mail fraud that they did.
Because he didn't buy the boat. He was selling tickets.
Yeah, right.
For this Black Star Line for this back to Africa trip, but he didn't buy the boat yet.
Gosh.
So because he was doing this through the mail, they caught him with mail fraud.
And he had a pretty consistent fight with a lot of the civil rights leaders of the day. My personal favorite was he had this argument, this constant battle going with W.E.B. Du Bois. And W.E.B. Du Bois called him this short, fat little man with a big head, and he hated him. And then Marcus Garvey's theory all the time was the reason that W.E.B. Du Bois hated him wasn't for any difference in politics, but because W.E.B. Du Bois was a little bit more light-skinned, and meanwhile, Marcus Garvey, since he was Jamaican, was darker-skinned, and W.E.B. Du Bois was jealous.
Across the street at 187, that's the former home of James Weldon Johnson. In 1899, he and his brother wrote the song Lift Every Voice and Sing, which became the Black national anthem during the Civil Rights Movement. He was the first African-American professor hired at New York University.
Right.
Wow. Now, okay, he wrote, one of his best-known works, which he wrote anonymously, was the autobiography of an ex-colored man about a biracial man passing for white for safety and advancement. And he wrote that book, it's either 1912 or 1927, they're not sure of the date because he didn't put a name on it in the first publication. I believe 1912 is when it first came out with no name, 1927 reissue with his name. Very interesting, that topic. It went on a lot back then. I forget the author's name of Imitation of Life. You guys heard of that?
No.
It's a very popular 1920s movie, and also remade in the 1950s. Both versions, the basic story is about a Black woman who meets a white woman. They're both single mothers, and the Black woman and white woman move in together to raise their daughters. In the book and the first movie, the Black woman has a pancake recipe. Because of society, she pretty much plays the role of the maid. And the white woman takes the recipe and becomes a success with this pancake recipe, Aunt Beulah's Pancakes, whatever it's called. Now, the Black mother has a daughter, and the book named Piola, who can pass for white, because her father was white.
Yeah.
And she can pass for white, and it plays a very strong role in talking about what's going on in society and the need to pass for white. That wouldn't happen today, I would think, because there is a, with all the problems we're still having, there is a certain level of acceptance that wouldn't make that necessary. But the fact that he wrote about this in 1912, and then it came up again in the 1920s, that it was a real thing that was going on in America, people passing and changing races.
I remember reading once telling Louis this a while ago about a young girl who had I think she was a Dutch father and a black mother, and she was trying to get work, and it was around that same era, and she would press her hair, iron her hair flat, because they used to do a pencil test, and if the pencil stuck in your hair, you were determined to be black and Negro, and thereby you wouldn't get employment, even though she had fair skin.
Yeah.
Because she was of a mixed race.
These issues, these things, these tests, these things did happen in America. The paper bag test was a real thing, where you get a paper bag, and if your skin is darker than this paper bag, you don't get the privilege. It was real. I see you're in shock here. What else? The 1% rule. If you have 1% or the one drop rule, one drop of black blood made you black in the South. One drop, which predating the Montgomery bus boycotts, with the black laws that predated the Jim Crow laws came out, there was a group that sent a man who was biracial but looked white, pretty much lived as white, but agreed to be a part of this experiment. I don't have the notes for me to give you his name and everything, but they sent him to the trolley to ride the white side of the trolley. And he got on and he said, "I am a Negro." No one said anything because he looks white, but he pressed the issue until they threw him off so they could sue. That was the whole purpose. They wanted to sue the trolley. But yeah, these things were real. On this street, mentioning the pencil test, on this street, we're not sure exactly where because it's no longer there. Madam C.J. Walker had her residence and business. She was the first black millionaire. Made her money with black hair care products. So that's also on this street. And to finish up with 187, he was also the president of the NAACP and one of the organizers for the Silent Parade in 1917 that is talked about or mentioned in Jazz by Toni Morrison.
And then really briefly, just this block in general is one of the first spots that African Americans were able to actually rent apartments. Most of the time, landlords would refuse to rent to black Americans. There was a guy by the name of Philip Payton, who was the mastermind behind the first couple buildings that that were able to rent to black Americans. And the whole story to it was that Philip Payton was a real estate agent and a broker, and he'd been hired by a bunch of different landlords all around the city to try and rent these properties, and he kept trying to see if he could integrate them and start renting to blacks, and every single time the landlords kept saying no, and he kept trying and they kept saying no and they kept saying no, and the way that he finally managed to get an edge in is just one of the most spectacularly American things that I've ever heard, which was he managed to finally get somebody to rent to black Americans because there were two landlords that owned the property, but they'd had a rift, and they were in the middle of a lawsuit and hated each other. And so, because they were in the middle of this lawsuit and fighting back and forth like mad, the one said yes to renting to blacks to spite the other landlord. Yeah. And that's how they first got blacks in here.